Dogcast Radio. If you like dogs, wherever you are in the world, we're the show for you. Hello, and welcome to episode 68 of Dogcast Radio. In this episode, we have a terrific interview with the author of a book about dogs and divorce.
The first thing people go to is who gets the dog? And, you know, that's the end of it. But there's a lot of other things.
We find out about the Freedom of Spirit Trust for Border Collies.
When people come to us to take a dog from us, they don't just take it. They have to not just walk it when they come. They have to sit and talk to it. They have to start to form a relationship with it. We will tell them everything about the dog so that they can understand it fully before they make any decisions whether it's the right dog for them or not. So that when they do actually take that dog, they already know it and the dog knows them and trusts them.
Plus, we have the Dogcast Radio News, and I'll be bringing you some of the reaction in the UK to the arrival of the Hire a Dog scheme, and to a ruling from the European Union about dogs and food, and a trampolining dog. But before all that, it's... Buddy's Diary.
Hello, Buddy the Black Guinea Pig here. I know that I'm actually a Labrador, but my tall female person has been exploring new activities and methods of training, and of course I am the one she tests them all out on. Hence, I feel somewhat akin to a guinea pig. I can't complain, of course, since it has all meant more attention for me and more time just me and her. Pesky Star gets left at home with the others while we go out and do some fun stuff. As soon as we return home, Star wants me to stand still while she sniffs me all over, reading the scent story of where I've been, what I've been doing, and most interestingly, what dogs and people I've met. The first new training thing we tried was something called the Kennel Club Good Citizen Classes. I am apparently now a bronze level citizen. Unfortunately, this has not elevated me to the status of being able to eat up to the table, or guaranteed me a seat in the front of the car, rather than in the back behind the tiresome dog guard. In fact, I'm not entirely sure what good it has done me, but it was fun. There were lots of other dogs at the class, although sometimes I had to pretend they weren't there, and not react as they walked past me, or as I walked past them. This was easy for me, but some of the dogs were very young pups, and could hardly contain their excitement and eagerness to play. We had to show that we could sit still while our people took our collars and leads off and on, fussed us and brushed us. I'm always up for anything that means I am the centre of attention, so this was very welcome. There was one strange part of the lessons where my female person wanted me to sit still while she walked through a gate, and then called me through after her. This is not a satisfactory state of affairs. How can I guard her if she makes me let her walk through first? More to the point, how can I spot another dog on the other side of the gate and dash over to play? However, when I obeyed and waited for her instructions, I was rewarded with tasty treats, so I played along. Something else we've been trying is called agility. I am an agile fellow, built along athletic lines. Not too skinny, not too sturdy, so agility and I are well suited. It's an odd pastime, where I am required to jump over things, round things and through things. Of course, you humans always find a way to complicate things, and rather than just let me run around and make my own fun, my female person tries to run round with me. Now, I am a fit fellow in the prime of life with four legs and a low centre of gravity. My person, on the other hand, and bear in mind this is said with affection, is on the rotund side of voluptuous, 50% lacking in the leg department, and I've never noticed her have an inclination to exceed a quick walking pace. Consequently, she can't keep up with me. In an effort to slow me down, she calls instructions to me, directing me this way and that, over a jump, through a tunnel, and at the end of certain pieces of equipment, she requires me to sit down and wait for her to catch up, making sure my feet are in contact with the equipment. Something else odd about this agility thing. I can walk and run and play and romp for hours on end without breaking into much of a pant. but going over a few jumps, listening to whether I could turn left or right, run through the tunnel, or over the walkway, tires me out completely. It's not so much the physical exertion, it's the concentration that wears me out. Every so often, I have to have a lie down, a pant, and a think. Then, I'm ready to go again. A really weird activity is heel work to music. For this, I'm required to do things like whirl around in a circle, weave through my person's legs, and walk backwards away from her. Who wants to walk away from their person? I want to walk to her and claim my treat. It took me ages to learn to back away. As I say, it hasn't been all bad, and I'm not one to dwell on the negative, but all this training is having a very unfortunate effect on me. More and more often, I find myself doing as I am told. The most frightening example happened the other day. Star is hopeless with food, and as usual, had abandoned her dinner bowl still half full of food. I set off at full tilt into the lounge to shove my snout into her dish and wolf the remains of her meal down. Unknown to me, my person was sitting in the lounge, realised what I was up to, and called out, "No, buddy, wait, leave." Without really knowing what I was doing, I found myself skidding to a halt, eyes turned to her, awaiting further instructions. A dog can stand so much, but anything that comes between a dog and an opportunity to eat can't be good. So this is Buddy the Reluctant Guinea Pig, saying until next time...
Squeak, squeak!
I mean...
The greatest fear dogs know is the fear that you will not come back when you go out the door without them. Stanley Coren, dog psychologist. Divorce is affecting more and more families, which of course means it's affecting more and more dogs. Jennifer Keane is the author of We Can't Stay Together for the Dogs. It's a book full of useful information. But who is the book for?
I guess I wrote the book for people like me. I was married and the marriage kind of went away and we had two dogs, and like many couples, our dogs were our kids in a weird way. I think only dog people sort of get that. Other people think it's weird, but
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
When we were splitting up, we wanted to make sure that our inability to stay together in a relationship didn't negatively affect them, because they didn't have any say in the matter.
Yeah. And I guess
and
as well...
there wasn't...
Sorry. I guess as well, they just don't understand what's going on, do they?
No. And, you know, and dogs are so in tune to our emotions and what's going on. And, you know, if there's things like, you know, tension or slamming of doors or somebody's not around as much or things like that, the dogs really pick up on that. And stress affects their behavior. And I also think it can ultimately affect their health.
Yeah, yeah. So you'd had this experience that sort of led you to want to help other people going through the same problem.
Exactly. When we were going through it, I went straight to the bookstore and was like, okay, there's got to be something about this to help us. And there wasn't. And it was kind of frustrating, but fortunately, I'm a professional dog trainer, so I have a little bit of additional knowledge about the, you know, inner workings of dog brains. But there was a time shortly after Moxie and I had moved out. Moxie's my Australian cattle dog, and I was talking on the phone to my ex, and we were talking about the dogs, and he sort of said, "You've always talked about writing a book. Well, write this book. This is the book I need to read right now." And that was how it got started.
So obviously, as you say, you've got the both sides. You know about dogs, and you've had the experience of divorce yourself. Now,
exactly.
There's so many, you know, so much help. There's so much information. So many pointers in the book. It's brilliant. We can't possibly, you know, cover all of it, but if we have a look at some of the issues you raise, because you separate it into three areas, don't you? You start off with the dog custody issues. So tell us a bit about that.
Well, the first section really is designed, that dog custody issues, is designed to just get people thinking about all of the issues that are involved, because I think the first thing people go to is who gets the dog? You know, that's the end of it. But there's a lot of other things, like what is the dog's personality like? Are they a dog that adapts to things well, or are they a dog that really, you know, is maybe a little bit anxious, a little bit fearful of new situations? How much exercise does the dog need? Is it a dog with special needs? Things like that, to really kind of get people thinking about the bigger pictures, not just the immediate who gets the dog, but more of a long term. What's my life going to be like as a single person? And what will I need to do to incorporate a dog into that new life?
Now, one of your chapters I found, you know, quite intriguing, because it's called Set Yourself Up to Succeed. So what do people need to do that?
You know, that was that chapter I sort of really wanted to include because, you know, even when I was going through this, I had moments where it was really like, oh, this is never going to work. This is going to be horrible. I can't do this. And so planning for success is really important. And in the book, I compare it to a method that I use when I'm training dogs. I try to set the dog up to be successful. So what that means is planning ahead and not making things any harder than they need to be and getting support where support's needed so that it's easier to be successful.
Yeah, yeah. So sort of have a support network around you and that kind of thing?
Right. You know, sometimes we feel like we have to do it all, but, you know, we have friends, we have family. You know, if you're thinking, oh, I travel a lot for business, how can I possibly have custody of this dog? Maybe you have a coworker or a friend who has a dog who would be happy to trade pet care with you.
Yeah.
You know, all it takes is asking the people around you. There's professional pet sitters, or, you know, talk to your dog trainer. They know someone. Talk to your vet. They know someone. And just really building a support community for you and your dog, I think, is really important for everyone.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And you take some potential problems and you give potential solutions for them as well, don't you, in the book?
Yeah, I try to kind of, you know, come up with those things and give potential ideas so that people can see, even if it seems like a big deal, there's definitely a solution. So, you know, for example, and this was one that came up for me, my ex and the other dog were going to be moving out of state after the divorce. And, you know, that kind of was scary initially, but, you know, well, I couldn't count on him for any time I needed pet care for Moxie, but I was able to find other people. And, you know, if something came up, it really isn't that far by car and we could still make it work. So that's just kind of an example of something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So when you've sort of considered the dog custody issues, you've got to get to the point where you actually make the arrangements for sort of how that dog's life is going to work. So talk us through some of the issues there.
As far as the different possible arrangements, or?
Yeah, sort of, I mean, yes, how can you actually make it work when you're not living together anymore, but obviously that doesn't mean the dog, you know, well, where does the dog live? You know, what are your options there?
I think one of the most common custody arrangements is a pretty informal one, and I've kind of given it a name, but I think people have been doing it without realizing, you know, doing it without thinking about it for a long time. I call it part-time pet parenting, and that is basically where one person pretty much has the dog full-time, but then the other parent still does want to have some interest in the dog's life and be able to see them and be able to spend time with them. So the part-time pet parent is like the weekend caretaker when you go out of town for the weekend or you go on vacation, or the part-time pet parent may say, hey, I'm going camping with my buddies and it'd be really great to bring Rover. And, you know, so just more of kind of a casual, short-term, occasionally, nothing really formal, nothing really planned out, but just kind of what works both, what works best for both people.
Yeah, yeah.
And the dog, of course.
Well, yes, yeah. And as you say, it sort of, it does help if you're still on speaking terms with the ex at that point, doesn't it?
That does help. That does help. And, you know, and that's not always possible.
No.
I detailed another case history of a couple who absolutely were not on speaking terms, but they managed to work out a solution so that one parent has the dog 1 week, the next dog has the parent the next week, and back and forth like that. And they use email or text messaging to communicate, and they have a dog walker because they do still live in the same neighborhood, and the dog walker who comes every day of the week on Friday walks the dog down the street to the other pet parent's house, tucks them in, and that parent comes home and there's the dog, and that works for them.
Yeah. How well does that work for the dog?
Again, it depends on the dog. Some dogs don't adapt to things well, but I think the more you can make something a routine, the more they can adjust to it. So in the beginning, week on, week off like that might be a little bit stressful, but if you keep the routine going, then that becomes the new routine. So I think it can work, but parents need to create a routine and create a little bit of security for their dog so that they know what to expect. Dogs really like knowing what to expect.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. You've talked a little bit about your situation where sort of you had one dog and your husband took the other dog. And obviously you have a chapter called Splitting the Pack and what happens with multiple dogs. So what can happen there?
When people have two dogs, a lot of times people get two dogs so that they will be best friends and that they will keep each other busy and they will be inseparable. And so that is something that is a big issue. When you have two, especially if you're going to be moving into an apartment, sometimes apartments won't take two dogs, they'll only take one, or that kind of definitely doubles the responsibility. So for some people, having to consider splitting the pack is an option. For some dogs, it would be more stressful, especially if they were more bonded. I have a quiz in the book to try and determine how bonded are your dogs to each other, and I think that's a good place to kind of start in figuring out, can we separate them? Do they need to stay together? What's going to be best for them?
Definitely. Because, you know, again, as we've said, they don't know, they don't understand what's going on, and sort of you can't even warn them, so they've got some anticipation, and then suddenly half the pack's gone.
Exactly.
And I mean, from my own dogs, I know, particularly the first dog we had, our Black Labrador, you know, he can cope with most things and he, you know, they're both fairly bomb-proof, but he will cope, he'll go anywhere and that's fine. But the second dog we have, a little Bichon, obviously she's only known the house with Buddy in it. And when I sort of take him off training, or, you know, for whatever reason, down to the vet or whatever, she definitely finds that quite unusual. And when we come back, her behaviour is different. And apparently when we're out, her behaviour, you know, she's just that little bit more needy and she keeps going to the door and she wants attention more because Buddy's not here. So, and again, obviously they would adjust to that if that became full time. But it must be so strange for them initially.
Yeah, I think it is, because like you say, you can't explain to them. And that's, you know, I think that's our, as dog owners, that's always our biggest stumbling block. Mm. We could just sit down and have a conversation with them. But, you know, knowing those things is really important. So, you know, in a situation like that, it would be extra necessary if the dogs did have to be separated. Or even, you know, when we have two dogs, often one of them will live longer than the other one. So I think it is important to kind of keep in mind things like training and boosting their confidence and practicing being away from each other in a really positive way so that they can cope with those things better.
Yeah, yeah. You broach quite a difficult subject, obviously, if neither party, you know, if neither partner feels they can keep the dog, you know, what the options are there.
Yeah, that was probably one of the harder chapters for me to write, because there's definitely a part of me that just wanted to say, you have to keep your dog.
Yes.
The end. but I know that's not, you know, there are other things about that that are beyond people's control sometime, and it is still based on what's best for the dog. So if it is a situation where neither parent is going to be able to provide for the dog, then rehoming is an option. A big part of that chapter is devoted to saying, do you really need to rehome your dog? But then, you know, but then also goes on to talking about finding an appropriate home. You know, sometimes a friend or family member may be looking for a dog that's already trained, is that they know its personality. Sometimes that can be a good solution, and then the dog can still sort of be in your life a little bit. And then also working with humane societies, rescue groups, and doing as much as you can to make your dog adoptable and to make them eligible for a really good forever home, like, you know, training and getting together the information on, does he have a microchip? Has he already been spayed or neutered? What's his history like? Has he done any classes? Does he do anything cool? Those types of things really help people get a picture of what is this dog like? Can I picture him in my home? And we'll help him find a really good home.
Yeah. I love where you say sort of, if your new partner isn't compatible with the dog, you know, or, you know, doesn't want the dog. And I love this sentence. My first instinct is to wonder what the heck you're doing with someone who doesn't like dogs.
And, well, that's kind of, you know, that's the first question.
Yeah. Stay with the dog, you know, dump the person, keep the dog.
Exactly. I don't know that I would totally trust anybody that didn't like dogs. That would be a giant red flag for me.
Yes. Oh, dear. Okay, so, we, you know, if you can get through the minefield of sort of discussing the custody issues and actually making the arrangement, you know, and sort of that you thrash out a deal where you're both happy and the dog is happy. You've then got some very useful advice about sort of this new life that you're going into, where you won't be, you know, part of a couple, you'll be probably on your own with the dog. So what are some of the, you know, important issues to bear in mind there?
I think the first one is definitely, where are you and the dog going to live? That's kind of, you know, shelter is job number one. And fortunately, I know here, more and more places are realizing that in, you know, especially apartment complexes, that in order to attract good renters, a lot of times good renters have big dogs, and they have to allow big dogs in order to attract people to their apartment complexes. And, you know, sometimes finding a roommate or staying where you're put or the dreaded living in with your parents for a while are all kind of options that potentially need to be explored.
Yeah.
Budget is another one. When, you know, dogs are expensive. We love them, but even though we don't have to save for a college fund, there's still a lot of expenses associated with having a dog. So I have a budget worksheet to try and figure out, how much am I realistically going to spend? Where, you know, can I cut costs anywhere, or where can I not cut costs, just so that you can build that into your monthly budget and not have any surprises or get caught short?
Yeah. Because obviously you're not going to, you know, perhaps have the amount of income that you had, to rely on, are you?
Exactly. And some people, you know, some people will, I think I've heard it called pedimony. You know, where perhaps a pet parent says, I don't have the time or the inclination to have custody of the dog, but I'm happy to contribute monetarily to the dog's care. So I think that's a little bit more rare still, but yay, that's an option.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, definitely a one-person income needs to go a little bit farther for taking care of the dog's needs.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I really like the positive aspects that you've included, you know, sort of the make it an opportunity and try something new, which would distract you and the dog from what's happened, wouldn't it? And create, you know, a new hobby for you.
Right. And, you know, spending time with our dogs, it helps relieve stress. It lowers blood pressure, and creating that new single lifestyle instead of sitting around and moping on the couch with your dog and complaining about it to your friends, go take a class, start a new sport, take up jogging, play frisbee in the park, things that you and your dog can do together, which are going to increase your bond with your dog, help your dog not get stressed out and have behavior problems. And then, who knows, maybe open you up to making some new friends.
Yeah, yeah. And I think, you know, maybe if you've left with, you know, the relationship with a feeling of failure at all, taking on a new challenge and doing well is going to help build your self-esteem as well, isn't it?
Exactly, exactly. It's really great to see. I know, especially we have agility classes at my dog training facility, and watching the dogs and humans, you know, conquer that teeter-totter, and they're both scared in the beginning, and then when they finally get it, the excitement and the pride in their eyes is so great to see.
Mm-hmm. As I say, we can't cover everything in the book, but if you could sort of pick, perhaps, you know, what's the worst pitfall to fall into, you know, when you're trying to cope with divorce in relationship to the dog?
I think that the worst pitfall I can see is using the dog as a bargaining chip or treating the dog like property.
Mm.
And saying, you know, well, you can only have the dog if I get the flat screen TV, or things like that, where you're getting away from the dog as a living, breathing member of the family and putting it into that property category. I think that's probably the worst case scenario.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And so, let's now move to the opposite end of the spectrum. Let's, you know, a best case scenario to achieve that. What, you know, what do people really need to bear in mind?
I think for me, the three most important things to keep in mind, I call it the three C's, and that is communication. You have to communicate with your ex. I'm really sorry, but that's just the way it needs to be, whether email, phone, whatever you guys can work. You have to let them know what you want, how you're feeling, what's going to work, what's not going to work, and be willing to hear that from them. And then the second C is compromise, because we can't, unfortunately, always get what we want. It doesn't always work the way we want it to, and a little bit of give and take is always going to be necessary. And then the third one is canine centricity, and that just basically means keep bringing the focus back to the dog. If everything is viewed through the lens of how does this affect the dog, because that's something that hopefully the couple both still has in common, no matter what, they both care about the dog. So if whatever the argument is about or whatever the disagreement is about, if you can say, okay, but how does this affect the dog? How can we make this work for the dog? Then they're on the same page again and they can move forward.
Yeah, definitely. Your last chapter is moving on with your dog at your side or in your heart. And I think this book is going to help a lot of people do just that.
I hope so.
If you'd like to know more about We Can't Stay Together for the Dogs, which really is packed with information and suggestions, we have a link to Jennifer's site on the Dogcast Radio site, as well as a photo of her with her dogs. I agree with Agassiz that dogs possess something very like conscience. Charles Darwin. You're listening to Dogcast Radio on www.dogcastradio.com.
Hello and welcome to the Dogcast Radio News Desk. I'm Kate.
And I'm Nick. Fireworks can be a huge problem for dogs. We can't say exactly why some dogs are terrified of fireworks, but there are theories that it is the noise accompanied by the smell of the gunpowder. Desensitizing a dog to fireworks can take a long time, and any kind of treatment is more effective the earlier the dog is exposed to it. Concerned owners can help their dog by playing sound effects of fireworks quietly at home, and there are also toys which simulate the explosive sound. The aim is to encourage the dog to make positive associations with fireworks. However, if your dog seems unable to stay calm, and especially if your dog becomes extremely distressed by fireworks, your veterinarian may prescribe sedatives. Staying calm yourself sets a good example for your dog, and turning on music may help mask the noise. Distraction toys can help pacify dogs, and a dog-appeasing pheromone-releasing device can also soothe the frayed nerves. Other natural solutions can include extra exercise before an expected firework display, or herbal remedies like the bark flower range. This is a very serious issue, and the RSPCA in Australia recently called for a ban on fireworks in Canberra after a display triggered a seizure in a dog so severe it had to be put to sleep. Much of Australia has already banned the private use of fireworks, and it is hoped Canberra will soon follow suit.
And now to another dog in Australia, this time in the Northern Territories, who was facing a different kind of danger. 3-year-old Bella swallowed a cane toad, which can kill a dog in 20 minutes. Her owner took her up to an animal hospital, where she was given an injection to make her vomit. Eventually, the treatment worked, and Bella threw up the toad. It is thought that cane toads kill hundreds of dogs and cats each year, but for Bella, there was a happy ending, and she was soon back home safe and healthy.
So what about the poor old cane toad in question?
Against the odds, it was vomited up still whole and alive, and is currently being cared for at the animal hospital, where staff have named it Spew.
A law is being proposed in the US to ban drivers having their dog on their lap while at the wheel. Holding a cell phone while driving is already outlawed, but it seems some people think they're safe on the road with their dog perched between them and the steering wheel. Statistics show differently, and in 2007, there were more than 100 accidents caused by drivers distracted by their dogs in California alone. The dangers of this behaviour were recently highlighted when a woman drove her SUV straight into a shop front while distracted by her dog jumping around her. The safest way for a dog to travel in any car is either behind a properly fitted dog guard or wearing a harness attached to a seatbelt. And this means safest for both dog and driver.
And finally, in Alabama in the US, a couple had a problem which wasn't quite up to 101 Dalmatians, but they still got more than they bargained for. Renee and John Campbell already had two dogs of their own, but when two strays showed up, they took pity on them and took them in. Imagine their surprise when both strays unexpectedly gave birth to a litter of puppies each, adding an extra 20 tiny canines to the household. Unbelievably, the Campbells are only looking for homes for 19 of the puppies, as they plan to keep one of them for themselves.
Well, I guess that after having 24 dogs around the house, maybe a mere 5 will seem easy. And that's all from us this time on the Dogcast Radio News Desk. Goodbye.
Nothing but love has made the dog lose his wild freedom to become the servant of man. D.H. Lawrence. The Border Collie is a well-known and loved breed around the world. Trainer, author and breed expert Barbara Sykes is well-known and respected for her knowledge of and work with these wonderful dogs. Barbara developed her own training technique called TLC, Thinking Like Canines. She's one of the few lady handlers to reach the top in the very male-dominated sheepdog trialling world, having qualified and competed in 7 English national trials and been a member of the winning English team at the international trials. Barbara has also trained dogs for television work and has international clients consulting her for behavioural advice. Barbara was born amongst border collies, and they're clearly her passion. For any breed, popularity can bring problems. And border collies do suffer from being misunderstood and sometimes misrepresented. Barbara has founded the Freedom of Spirit Trust for Border Collies, and I asked her exactly what the trust does.
It takes in rescues, but it will only take in, or its aim is to only take in rescue dogs, i.e. dogs that have been abused, neglected, dogs that are suffering real kennel stress in other rescues, and older dogs where maybe somebody's had to go into a home, or one recently where a farmer had died and nobody would take his dog and it was 14 years old.
Oh.
So we give permanent sanctuary to dogs like that. Mm. What we try not to do is take in dogs that are already in a home. Example, it's probably 12 months old and somebody suddenly decided it's not the dog for them. We try to help them over the telephone to rehome them themselves or find out what the problem is and see if we can't sort the problem out for them. It's also about education. Basically, taking rescue dogs in is fine, but we have to question how they come to be in a rescue environment to begin with. So some of the things that the trust will be working sort of to try and clear up is the puppy factory farming, excessive breeding, a better understanding of the breed, helping people to understand what its needs are, its dietary requirements, etc. Also, going into schools with the ambassador dogs, which obviously helps dogs of all breeds. Although it is a breed-specific charity, the education side of it is for all breeds, particularly with the aggression problem we have in this country at the moment.
I mean, that sounds fantastic, actually. Taking dogs and letting particularly children meet them, because if you can inspire them young, you've got them, haven't you?
Yeah. Going into schools and getting the children when they... I mean, I've had dogs in my car when parents have actually said to the children, go and stroke that nice doggy in that car, which is the worst thing you can advise a child to do.
Yeah.
And if you can actually get those children to turn around and say, well, actually, that's not the right thing to do. We've been taught a different way. You know, a lot of people, they will go straight up to a dog and walk straight into its space, face onto it, bend down to it. If you actually sit on the floor and watch a human being tower above you, it's pretty formidable. And teaching children the correct way of not to walk straight up to a dog, that you're actually better off walking down the side of it or even walking backwards so it's not confrontational. If the dog is dubious or is aggressive, it can't bite your face. Mm. And it has a choice. It has what we call fight and flight distance. It can actually move away from you. If you're walking directly into its path, it can't move away from you. You're either frightening it or making it aggressive. It's that kind of education that we want to aim at.
Yeah. And is it you and your dogs that go in, or is it somebody else? Or
no, it's myself that goes in, and we have some ambassador dogs here. Obviously, we've got an awful lot of border collies here. We have 5 that are specifically for that job. They range from 11 years down to 2.5. A 2.5-year-old is learning.
Yeah.
So she doesn't do anything which is intense. She goes to seminars with us and sits at the side and watches the other dogs. We do a lot of talks. We do seminars. We do workshops. And the dogs go with us. Each one has its own specific speciality. So it may be one that goes into hospitals to visit children, one that goes into schools, one who is actually really, really good at teaching small children. If they make a mistake and they do actually accidentally pull his hair while you're teaching them, he's fine. So they all have their own different little speciality.
Yeah. Now, I think obviously that's something we have to appreciate, that although we have breed standards and we can say, well, this breed will tend to be like this, they're all individuals, aren't they? And as you say, the trust is to, you know, convey to people, as you say, a better understanding of the breed and what it needs, isn't it?
Yeah. I think we parallel an awful lot the border collie to the human being in the respect that in the human race we can have tall, small, thinner, fatter, dark hair, blonde hair, ginger hair, and then different temperaments. You have somebody who's quick-tempered, somebody who's more placid. And in a lot of the breeds, although you will get a range of differences, say in the Labrador or in the Spaniel. For example, your Spaniels, you're looking at usually liver and white or black and white. Your Labradors, you're looking at golden or black. Now, if you look at your Border Collie, you've got your red, you've got your black and white, your tricolour, your mottles, your merles, you've got your short coat, you've got your medium coat, you've got your prick ear, your drop ear, your brown eyes, your amber eyes. And each one of those carries its own character and its own characteristics and its own temperament. So it's such a wide variety in the actual breed itself that unless people understand the breed, they don't know what they're getting. Somebody rang me up today saying he wanted to get a Border Collie. And somebody told him that as his Labrador had been difficult to train, go get a Border Collie because they're easy. Oh, no dog is easy to train, just as no child is easy to bring up. You have to actually work at it. The difference with a Border Collie in a lot of cases, it's very quick and it's very intelligent and it will outsmart you if you're not careful.
Yeah.
So you have to know a short-coated, prick-eared, amber-eyed collie is not the best of dogs to go into a companion home unless they really understand the breed. And a very light amber-eyed collie is not the best dog to put where there's children because it has a very, very sharp fight and flight distance. And it's this knowledge of the breed that can help people if they want a Border Collie as a companion to know which type is the best type to go for. And if they have got a type which, oh, you know, I didn't really want something so energetic or so quick-witted, they can learn how to deal with it because so many companion Border Collies are on the wrong diet, which hypes them up and makes them hyperactive.
Yeah. Now, I mean, that's fascinating. I didn't know any of that about the different types and the different sort of the appearance, having implications for what the character will be like. But, I mean, I think I really like the wording. I've been looking at the website and I really like the wording where you say, we're not encouraging people to go and get a Border Collie, but we're not saying, don't go and get a Border Collie, because so many times the message about Border Collies is, you know, it's almost a negative one, sort of, oh, they won't be okay in a pet home, they won't. So it's nice to hear this positive message of, well, they will be happy, but you have to do, you know, ABC, you know, you have to treat them properly.
You have to understand them. I mean, we've got to think, this dog was bred to work sheep. And it's one of the few breeds that was bred to work with man and for man, yet still work on its own. So you take a sled dog, it pulls the sled and it's pulling the sled for man. You take a retriever, it goes out and it retrieves for man. Now you take a sheepdog and it is working for man. It will go out on the hills to bring a flock of sheep in. But while it's out there, it's on its own. So if it comes across a problem, it has to work out how best to deal with that problem. Then when it comes back with the flock of sheep, it has to go back under man's command and do as he says. It hasn't to come back and say, hey, hang on, I've been out on those moors making my own decisions. I aren't listening to you anymore, pal. It has to come back and still work for man. So its label has always been the shepherd's working dog and companion, man's best friend, one man and his dog. And that's exactly what they are. They will do anything. They will work until the drop, but you have to understand them. And there's no reason, 30, 40 years ago, we didn't have agility, we didn't have fly ball, we didn't have squeaky toys, we didn't have tuggy toys, we didn't have clickers and frisbees. But these dogs were quite calm and quite settled in companion homes, being a member of the family.
Mm.
And a lot of these things that we have now hype them up. I mean, I hear people say to me, oh, these dogs have to be doing. And they're brilliant agility dogs. Well, they're not actually. They're brilliant because they can jump. But unfortunately, they are so sensitive. They get so hyper and they don't need to do. If you explain to a collie what you want, it'll do it. It doesn't need to get overexcited. So they don't have to be doing. They're a pack dog. And in the pack, a dog has got two modes. It's either killing or chilling. So it's either doing or it's chilling out. And we hype these dogs up with this information that says they must have 6 miles walking a day, 2 hours ball throwing, you've got to have lots of toys in the house and stimulate them. You're actually teaching that dog to never ever rest and be content with its own company. They're constantly on the go, and you know, what does a farm dog do when it's not working? It's usually in the barn fast asleep or just trailing about the farmyard.
Yeah.
So we have to look at it. Yes, we do have farm dogs that are stuck on chains and not getting looked after, and we do have dogs in pet homes that aren't getting looked after. It's not the type of home. It's whether the dog has got a good, sensible owner or not.
Yeah.
So they were bred to work. and they will work on a low energy diet because we need stamina from them and we need sensible dogs that can work a situation out. And therefore, you don't get them hyperactive, you don't feed them on a false high energy diet, and you do teach them how to think, not to get overexcited.
Yeah, yeah. It's funny because we went to a farm in Scotland where it's Lolt Farm, I think it was, and it was Neil, and he works several sheepdogs at one go, border collies at one go. And he was saying, because I was going to ask you about this, he said, you know, the wrong message gets out about border collies. If you want one that is a fairly laid-back dog, then from a puppy, you know, you don't mess with him all the time kind of thing. You teach him, no, this is time to just relax. And you don't stimulate him all the time. So it's fascinating to hear you know, echoing that. That's, you know, yeah.
But we've got to sort of think that these shepherds, their ancestors are the ones that bred this dog and gave the breed to us in the first place. They knew what they were doing when they bred it. They bred an intelligent working dog that was also a companion. One man and his dog will go out on the moors all day, and that's all they have for company with each other. Mm. And they are really, really companionable. It makes me want to weep when I go out and I see people with a border collie and it's on a lead and it's pulling them to the left and pulling them to the right and it's sniffing at a grass verge here and sniffing at a grass verge there, and I think there's no empathy, there's no relationship. I wouldn't sit in a pub with somebody who was texting all the time on the mobile phone. I'd say, look, listen to me.
Yeah.
I've come in here to have a drink with you, listen to me. So when I take a dog out for a walk, we talk to each other. We're companionable. I won't keep stopping and, you know, having a stroke with them and just build a relationship up with so many people that they take the dog on a walk and they have to have a piece of liver to get it back, or a ball or a toy. Well, to me, a ball or a toy is to amuse the dog when it doesn't have its human being there for company. If I go in the garden and my dogs have a ball or a plant pot is their latest craze, as soon as they see me, they drop it and come running to me. They don't bring it and say, play with me. They drop it and come to me and say, give us a hug.
Yeah.
So whatever it is they've got is to amuse them. It's like having a child, isn't it?
Mm.
Well, go play with that toy while I go peel the potatoes, vacuum the floor or whatever. Then when you come into the room, the toy goes down and you talk and you communicate. And what is sadly lacking in so many pet dogs now is communication. We're using gadgets and implements to communicate. 10 different kinds of leads and all the toys and all the gadgets and the squeaky toys and the tuggy toys. And, I mean, I want, if somebody comes to me on a consultation, I'll say, drop the tuggy toy. There's no reason why a dog should use its teeth on anything connected to a human being, unless it's a police dog or a guard dog or, you know, a man-work dog, because these are the dogs that are then being educated to do that when somebody's holding something. If you hold a ball out to any of my dogs, they'll look at the floor and say, well, put it down there then.
Oh,
don't take it out of your hand.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I've heard from other people, the relationship that you build, you know, as a shepherd particularly, you're working with that dog, and you do become very, very close, as you say, and that obviously appeals to people because the Border Collie is a very popular dog, isn't it? It's found in a lot of homes.
Mm-hmm. They are very companionable. They have a wonderful sense of humour, which can be sarcastic sometimes. They have a wonderful way of relating to you, and they do actually seek company. Every dog is derived from wolf, and because the Border Collie has been kept as a working dog, it has that more natural pack instinct, and it likes to have the parent figure, the pack leader, somebody it can depend upon, somebody who will protect it, somebody it can relate to. And then you just build up the relationship with it, whereas so many training methods now are used with gadgets that the relationship ceases to be. And you don't need the gadgets, you just need yourself and to be able to talk to the dog and it will respond. It's almost like people are frightened of communicating and loving the dog because we have to have all these implements to do it. And we don't need to have them. And that's basically what the trust is about. When people come to us to take a dog from us, they don't just take it. They have to not just walk it when they come. They have to sit and talk to it. They have to start to form a relationship with it. We will tell them everything about the dog so that they can understand it fully before they make any decisions, whether it's the right dog for them or not. So that when they do actually take that dog, they already know it, and the dog knows them and trusts them. So avoid it on that start off to relationship. Then we monitor the first 3 months of them with the dog to make sure that that relationship keeps building. And the things that we say to them is, you might want to have toys with a dog and you might want to play ball games, but that's later. For the first 3 months, just build up a relationship with the dog. If you're taking a foster child and overload them with toys and computer games and goodness knows what, you don't get to find out what makes that foster child tick. And it's the same with a dog. So when you take it in, forget the toys and the games and the balls and just communicate with the dog. Walk, talk, build up the relationship. Then introduce your games later on when you've actually got an obedient, well-mannered dog who wants to be with you rather than only coming back if you've got a piece of food on offer. The recall, it's a happy recall. It should make it come bounding back to you. It should never want to be more than 10 or 20 yards away from you. Whereas we see dogs, people let them off the lead and whoosh, they go off and they're running 200, 300, 400 yards. Oh, it's wonderful. My dog's running around. And we're thinking, well, apart from the fact that it isn't safe and it is actually against the law, why does your dog want to keep running in the opposite direction to you?
Yeah.
It should want to be with you. It should want to stay with you and go for a run in a circle and come back to you because it never wants to be far away from you. That's where your relationship is.
Yeah, yeah. I think the website particularly has some beautiful language about these dogs, because I like it when you say it matters little who the owner is or what their lifestyle is. What matters is the amount of love and understanding they're prepared to give.
Yeah.
And you point out that the border collie will give you back, you know, 100 times.
And you also, will.
Yeah, yeah. And you also say, if you reach its soul, for once there you will be trapped in a world of unbelievable love and honesty.
Yeah, that's the collie eye, looking into a collie's eyes. They are amazing. The, you know, people say, if you say, oh, my dog's talking to me, oh, yeah, right, okay, we've got this person, a bit of a nut who thinks the dog talks to them. But dogs do, but they talk with body language, and we don't always listen. I had somebody with me today, and I said, just stand up your dog at the side of it, and I'm going to walk towards you. And as I started walking, he said the dog was wagging its tail, it was pleased to see me, and I said, no, it's not. It's giving a little wag of its tail in the same way that we smile when we meet a stranger, to hope they're going to reciprocate that pleasant smile. If they don't, we have to decide how to deal with it. Do we ignore them? Are we going to be quite aggressive towards them? Are we going to hope that we can actually make them be pleasant towards us? It's the stranger advance. And I said, your dog has already given you 5 signals that says I'm not happy. It's licking its lips, it's yawning, it's blinking its eyes, it's looking up at you. And the simple act of him standing in front of the dog sat down and relaxed.
Aww.
So that's talking to your dog with body language, and that's what we always fail to notice with these dogs. Whereas the shepherds will go out, they don't have to lay on the floor to know the dog doesn't see what they see. They know automatically that the dog is seeing things from a different point of view. So both mentally and physically, we have to look at the dog and think, you're not seeing the world as I do. For example, people will say heel and pull a dog back, but the dog is pulling when you're doing that. So heel means pull.
It's
just a simple little thing. You have to get the dog to do what you want and then put the sound on for the dog to understand it. That takes away all the mixed messages and all the confusion. Whereas people will come towards with a problem dog and it's being a real pest and it's trying to get up on the knee and they stroke it and say, good dog, you're all right, sit down. Well, they've actually told the dog it's right for being a pest and jumping up.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they wouldn't do that with a child. They would say to the child, sit there and be quiet. So it's a mixed messages we give our dogs. But you can actually say to a child the next day, I know I said that yesterday, but we've changed the goalpost today. It's a little bit differently. Can't do that with a dog. So you need to try and get it as right as you can the first time. And that means understand the dog. And if you actually do, throw the gadgets away and just look at the dog and say, you and me, pal, you know, I absolutely adore you. I love you to bits. Let's start and communicate. Your dog will just give it all back to you.
Yeah.
It'll just open itself up. But, you know, you have to sort of be prepared to give, and then the dog will just give its entire life back to you.
Yeah, yeah. So anybody that's interested,
indeed in finding out how to improve their relationship with their dog, it sounds, but particularly with border collies. If they're thinking about getting a border collie, if they've got a border collie and they're having problems, or if they're looking for a rescue dog, the Trust is a great place to come.
It is. It definitely is, yes. We're always at the other end of a phone or the email.
Yeah. Can you tell us the website address?
I can. It is www.fostbc, that's Freedom of Spirit Trust Border Collies, fostbc.org.uk.
Barbara's knowledge of her dogs and her love for them was evident in everything she said there. She has some great advice and is helping make life better for so many dogs in so many ways. If you'd like to visit the Freedom of Spirit Trust for Border Collies website, there's a link on the Dogcast Radio site. Hardly any animal can look as deeply disappointed as a dog to whom one says no. Geoffrey Museeff Masson. FlexPets has arrived in the UK, and the Kennel Club is uniting politicians in opposition to the new business that sees dogs rented out to customers for an hour at a time to take on walks or to parties or wherever. The idea has recently spread from Los Angeles to London and will soon expand to Glasgow. Member of Parliament David Drew tabled a motion for other MPs to sign up to and commented, "Dogs are not jewellery or dinner suits to be used for a day and then returned. They are animals that have an exceptionally strong bond with people and require a stable home environment." Robert Brown, a member of the Scottish Parliament, tabled a similar motion north of the border condemning the idea, arguing, "I am shocked that dog rental businesses describe themselves as a service targeted at dog lovers. Dog renting is an idea which will horrify most dog owners and dog lovers and encourages irresponsible attitudes towards dogs." The arguments against this idea were summed up by Caroline Kisco, the Kennel Club spokesperson. "When someone rents out a dog, their main interest is their own enjoyment, not the welfare of the dog. Like us, dog rental businesses should be encouraging dog lovers to volunteer to walk dogs for the local rehoming centre for free, rather than charging up to £4,800 a year for the privilege. Responsible owners realise that dogs require consistency as well as companionship, and that changes to routine can cause behavioural problems. Worryingly, the business in question, FlexPets, promises to rent out only dogs aged 2 to 5 years, with nothing said about the welfare of the dogs once they pass this age." Dr. Emily Blackwell, clinical behaviourist, University of Bristol, echoed the Kennel Club's concerns, saying, "Our research suggests that inconsistency in owner behaviour is associated with an increased number of problematic behaviours in pet dogs. Being passed back and forth between a number of homes may therefore have an adverse impact upon a dog's welfare." Another member of the Scottish Parliament, Dr. Bill Wilson, is exploring the possibilities of having the scheme legally banned. He says, "The time to consider these issues is now, before renting dogs becomes commonplace. To abuse a metaphor, let's not be in the position of trying to close the kennel door after the rent-a-dog phenomenon has bolted." Now, I've thought about this one long and hard, and I have to say my first instinct was to dislike the idea. Then I heard the founder of the company interviewed, and it did seem that she had put a lot of thought into it, that she chose her dogs carefully, that they were available for adoption, and it seemed possible that the scheme might do some good. I have to say that while I could see the reason like that, the whole thing just didn't feel right. And finally, I realised why. Because fundamentally, FlexPets encourages us to view dogs as a commodity. Dogs are not just another possession to be bought on a whim and disposed of just as lightly and easily. There are enough people in the world already who think they can switch a dog on and enjoy it, then switch it off, leave it and ignore it for several hours at a time. It just doesn't work that way. Between us and dogs, it's all or nothing. It's commitment or choose another pet. You can dress it up however you like, but ultimately, the partnership between humans and canines is ancient and has advanced us both, and we owe them way more than hiring them out by the hour to make a fast buck. It seems the British were again living up to their dog-loving reputation when the Kennel Club, along with dog-friendly bed and breakfasts, cafes, restaurants and pubs, reacted to a European Union ruling concerning dogs and food in a bid to get more Britons dining with their dogs. Hundreds of businesses have signed up to the Kennel Club's Open for Dogs campaign, which aims to improve access for dogs and dog owners to a variety of places, including those that serve and sell food. The move comes as an EU ruling cracks down on bed and breakfasts that allow dogs into kitchens where food is prepared. Caroline Kisco, Kennel Club spokesperson, said, "We understand that there is an EU ruling against allowing dogs into food preparation areas, and obviously the law has to be respected. However, so long as a dog is well behaved and the proprietor follows standard hygiene practices to keep their premises clean, there is absolutely nothing to stop dogs from going into those areas where food is served and sold. We don't want people to see the EU ruling as a blanket ban on dogs in places that serve food, when it only refers to preparation areas. Eating out is a social experience, and the very presence of dogs encourages people to socialise and relax. So businesses would really benefit from opening their doors to dogs. There are also millions of dog owners in the UK who want to pop out for a bite to eat but don't wish to leave their dogs behind, so it's a win-win situation." Well, I'm one of those dog owners in the UK who want to take their dog with them when they go out to eat, so absolutely. And finally, we all know life can have its ups and downs when dogs are involved, and for a Staffordshire Bull Terrier called Harvey, this was quite literally true. Naughty Harvey used a trampoline to bounce his way over the garden wall. He was used to going on the trampoline with the family children, and it's the only way he could have cleared the tall barrier. Luckily, after a few days on the loose, he was returned to his owners by the RSPCA. Well, I've heard of dogs bouncing with health before, but let's hope Harvey has a little less bounce from now. Till next time, look after yourselves and your dogs. Thanks for listening to Dogcast Radio, available from www.dogcastradio.com. That's dogcastradio.com. If you'd like to get in touch with us, and wherever you are in the world, we'd love to hear from you. You can do so in a variety of ways. By phone from the UK, you can contact us on 0121-288-0922. From the US, you can contact us on our American number, which is 315-849-2022. From any other country, you'll need your international exit code and then 44121-288-0922. You can contact us on Skype with the ident Dogcast Radio. That's all one word, Dogcast Radio. By email, you can contact me on julie@dogcastradio.com. When contacting us by email, if you have the facilities, please record your questions or comments and send them to us as an audio file. That way we can include them directly in our programme. We can accept most formats, for example, WAV, MP3. All these methods of contacting us can be found on our website, which is www.dogcastradio.com. And as ever, the final word goes to Jenny.
Which dogs smell of onions? Hot dogs!